producing over 500 hours per week of talk radio. GCN Live is a world leader in talk radio. Archives for the following program can be found at GCNLive.com.
Delaney again here on America Tonight. Coming up in this hour of the show, we visit with a few really great people. We start on a lighter note about Halloween. We just passed through Halloween. For a lot of people, it meant, wow, Saturday night, and I can go to parties, or I can stay home and hand out candy. I mentioned this the other day when we were on the air, but I did the hand out candy thing, and it was actually kind of fun. A lot of kids dressing up, sweet kids, mostly young. I think the oldest that I had at the door might have been a young teenager who was dressed like a pirate, but we had a couple Donald Trumps, even a Tom Cruise, a lot of princes. This is somebody who's dressed up like a gladiator from head to toe. Was pretty an interesting costume for sure. And I looked this up, but I guess I was stunned by the number. But they say that the average American spends 79. They have it down to the penny too, by the way. The average American spends $79.82. That's the National Retail Federation who came up with that number. So candy, costume, going to the costume shops, whatever it is. But wow, that's pretty big deal. A lot of people consider Halloween like a holiday, and 157 million Americans, they say, participated or were going to participate in the Halloween. How many actually did is one thing, but you know, who knows? It's pretty unscientific. How can you for sure know exactly how many people, you know, do the Halloween thing? But the age range is pretty interesting, because you have Halloween parties, and what do people spend on decorations? Maybe $30 for decorations. They really, really get into it, and it's pretty fascinating stuff. So we switch gears, and coming up, we're going to talk with Brian Moreland. He's my friend who is a horror author and has written 6 books, and he's got a new novella out, and he talks about that and talks about writing horror and mixing in history and whatnot. It's funny, because if you met Brian, he's very mild-mannered, sweet, nice guy, and he writes these wild horror books, kind of reminds, you know, some people would look at Stephen King, and he was his father and was into sports and some of the crazy things that Stephen King certainly came up with in his career. But I think you'll really enjoy hearing Brian and what he has to say about horror. And speaking of horror, real life horror, Rwanda, if you wind your mind back to 1994 and you think of the Rwandan genocide, one of the most horrific events of the last century, you'd have to say that 1 million people tortured, raped, murdered, thousands displaced. I mean, an atrocity that you can't even really put into words. But what happened and the time in between when nobody was there and nobody was listening, and the Hutus and the Tutsis, and the Hutus who inhabited the area for hundreds of years before the arrival of the Tutsis, and the Tutsis dominating the Hutu people through this feudal state, and the Hutus relegated to peasantry, and the Tutsis, establishing their kingdom. And oh my, I mean, looking at anything related to Rwanda and thinking of the cries for help and what happened in the landscape back then and how volatile it was and the violence that erupted between the Tutsis and the Hutu and political supporters and, you know, the people that were killed and the massacres, the awful, awful massacres that happened and how it got to where it got to in the 90s when the Civil War was the act of genocide and the war crimes. It's just unbelievable. Again, something you can't really describe, and how long it continued until finally there was a ceasefire, and that took such a long time for that to happen, for the accords to be signed and for the country to, you know, move forward. And we have a fascinating conversation with a general who was there for the UN in the peacekeeping mission, General Dallaire, and the Canadian who doesn't hold back and talks about what happened to him and what he saw, and when he came back from being there, how awful it was to regain what was left of his mind, really, from what he had seen, and the targeted killings and the terrible, terrible things that they did to so many people, and people who were, again, just targeted, and what happened. And Rwanda was just a country in shambles, and economically and politically, and the infrastructure and the social structure, and, you know, what's happened. Now, moving forward, things have gotten a lot better, of course, in Rwanda. But imagine the Security Council establishing the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and they were trying to try the primary perpetrators of the crimes committed in Rwanda in 1994, and they thought that that would bring peace and stability by addressing the crimes. And the UN assisted Rwanda to create a court system, and but who would have trust in these governments to get rid of the refugee leaders of the regime before? And, you know, for the people that were killing in the regions, and how to bring them to justice. And, you know, ultimately, there were a lot of things that happened moving forward. Like in 2008, the prosecutor who was in the middle of all of this agreed to let Rwanda conduct its own domestic trial of a case that was investigated by their office. And this is how fast they moved forward, understanding they would be part of the jurisdiction if the trial was unfair and effective, which was great, because this was the notion. You had four RPF soldiers on trial for the massacre of the Rwandan archbishop and three bishops and nine other clergy in June of 94, and it was the only domestic prosecution of soldiers for the 1994 war crimes. And, you know, the world was watching this, and, you know, even Human Rights Watch referred to the trial as political whitewash, saying that the trial only lasted a few days and had no international attention. And as I said, only the people who knew were watching, and those people were really watching. And then what was revealed is what, you know, ultimately the awful things that happened, and how a handful of soldiers, some of the horrific things that they had done, and the overall picture of Rwanda. But wait till you hear this general and hear what he has to say about the frustration of not getting any help and what it was like to deal with the people. So on that note, I'm going to boot and let you stay and listen. Hang with us here on ATN.
My name is Bill Bonner, and I have an important message. Right now, the highest levels of government are struggling against an inevitable crisis, but they're about to lose control. When this happens, it will rip our country apart in ways you never imagined, from where we shop to the family you want to protect. Look, I've made predictions like this before. A few years ago, I warned that the housing prices would collapse. Before that, I warned that dot-com companies would crash, and they did. Those who listened had a chance to save themselves. But this has nothing to do with the stock market. This will affect us all. I've posted a free video at disappearingwealth.com. Maybe you'll disagree with my conclusions, but first you need to watch this video and see the facts for yourself. You can watch the video for free right now by going to disappearingwealth.com. Again, that's disappearingwealth.com.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
To join us on the show again as we have Halloween creeping up on us. He is such a prolific writer, and he's just so good. His stories pull you right in, and if you love horror, even if you don't, I implore you to read Brian's stuff. But he's got a new novella out, which I love these novellas because you can get through them. You know, frankly, if you're really swamped and you get hooked in, you can actually finish it, because it's so frustrating when you get sucked into a story and then you have to kind of put it aside and then you're remembering, oh, I love this, I got to go back to it. Here you can read this. You can read this on the train for everybody listening to us in the Northeast, catching a flight. You could read it for certain in a day or over the weekend or whenever it is that you have that little bit of time. So I love it. 110 pages it is. Darkness Rising is the name of the book, and the story is creepy, creepy, scary, and has a wild ending. Let's just put it that way. Brian, thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks, Kate. It's great to be back on your show.
So you heard what I said about novellas, and you've gone into that. I mean, you know, you write all kinds of things, but am I right about that? It's you can get through the novella, and it gets you excited because you can get to the end without having to wait when we have these busy lives.
That's right. Yeah, my novellas are, you know, just a little over 100 pages, so you can read them, and you know, just depends on how fast you read, but a couple hours, 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, and so this story, Darkness Rising. How did you develop Darkness Rising? It's about a poet who definitely has some emotional problems, or he's scarred by a past. How did you come up with the plot around Darkness Rising?
Well, it originally started out as I was doing some experimental writing years ago, writing a whole bunch of poems, and I was trying to tell a story through poetry. And then I came up with this character who was a poet, and he was bullied all his life. But he also has a dark side that seeks revenge against anyone who bullies him. And when a year ago I came across all these poems and decided to see if I could flesh this out into a story. And that's when I came up with my three killers that bring out Marty's dark side. And I actually incorporated some of the poems into the novella.
So the character is Marty and Marty Weaver. And what happens with Marty? Anything with a lake. He goes out to a lake, and then what happens at the lake?
He goes out to this lake. It's where he goes to read poetry. He's totally in love with this woman named Jennifer, which is a friend of his, but she doesn't know it. So he kind of just channels all his emotions into this journal of poetry, and he goes out to the lake and he reads poems to the lake, and there just happen to be three sadistic killers out there who shoot snuff films, and this is their hunting ground, and they see Marty reading his poetry and decide to pick on him and torment him and make him a subject to their next movie. And that's when things get interesting, because they have no idea that Marty has a dark side, too.
Wow. I mean, here's an interesting question. When you start to write, and you gave us a little glimpse of that, how you tried to tell a story through a poem, when you start to write, do you always know where your character, do you have it laid out in your mind, hey, I think this is what's going to happen, or does, as it starts to unfold, do you sometimes surprise yourself with where the story takes you?
Yes, I always surprise myself. I rarely know exactly where it's going. I'll have an idea of a direction, but I'm always discovering along the way, and it takes me several drafts, you know, maybe 50 to 100 drafts before I get all the ideas in place.
And then it just starts to unfold, right, as you go along, which is so interesting, because when people say they sit down to write a book and they've never written a book, and you know, there's that thing out there where I can't tell you how many times I've heard this sitting around at a bar, at a restaurant or whatever, you overhear a conversation that says, you should write that book, and how many people don't write that book, and you're an encourager. You always encourage people to do that. But there is a difference between people who really know how to write and somebody who just kind of steps into it. So you see how the process is. And that's what Darkness Rising, like you say, you sit down and then it takes you in a different direction. And I was reading some of the quotes of people that were giving you reviews, and one of them, I love this because I think they nailed it. Darkness Rising is a bit Hellraiser, love Hellraiser, a bit Romeo and Juliet, and a lot of signature Brian Moreland. It's wonderful. So, like, now you're a brand, Brian Moreland. You have, like, your own brand. So people know, if you go to Amazon.com, I want everyone to do this. I'm serious. This is how big this guy is. If you go to Amazon, you just type this name in. All of his books come up. He has his own page. And, you know, we had you back on talking about Shadows in the Mist, and we talked about, I think, Dead of Winter, too. You just have a whole bag full of really, really interesting twists and plots and different stories that pull us in. Is that part of the deal, no matter what genre you're in? Is it really about the strong story? Is that what hooks us in? Is that, you know, is that the drug we need that pulls us into writing or books?
Yes. Yeah, and I love a good mystery, and so all my books, you know, are mysteries at the core, and it's also about just real people up against usually some kind of supernatural forces that really force them to face their own demons and to rise to heroic occasions to overcome what these supernatural forces are challenging them to do.
Yeah, it's great. It's just a great, great story. So once you put this to bed, and how many have you written now between novellas and books?
Six books.
Wow. That is, that's unbelievable. Is the goal to be, like, I don't know, what does Stephen King have, like 50? Something more than that, probably.
Yeah, my goal is just to write my whole life and output as many books as I can. If I can get to 50, boy, that'd be great.
Yeah, 50 books. So after you finish one, are you already starting to think about your other, or you're in the middle of working on one?
Yes, I'm in the middle of working on my next, it's probably going to be a novella again. And, yeah, I'm always working on probably two books at the same time. And there are stages of writing where I'll write a draft out and then give it to some readers or my editor, and then I'll start working on the next one. So I usually have two going at the same time.
Wow. We're speaking with Brian Moreland. He is an author. He's written many, many books in the horror genre. Darkness Rising is his latest novella. You can get it on Amazon.com, certainly. Do you have a favorite book? Is it hard to say that? It's like children giving birth, like, oh, you know, here's all my children. I can't pick out one. Certainly I can't. Is your first the most exciting? Do you ever capture that again?
I would say I do have a favorite. I mean, they're all like children to me. You're right. I mean, I'm very connected to all my books because I spend over a year on them and with the characters and developing the stories. I would say my favorite, the one I had the most fun writing, was Dead of Winter, and I just really got into those characters and the history of the Native American mythology that I was incorporating into that book, and the history of the Catholicism, how it connected with exorcising demons, and just the whole story, the way it unfolded for me, was just a very exhilarating experience.
Yeah, and that's the other part of it. Your stories, as you said, you're about the story. You have to do research in so many of these cases because of what you're incorporating into it, right?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of my stories are based on some kind of historical fact that's, you know, maybe unexplained. Like Shadows of the Mist was about the Nazis' fascination with the occult, and I really incorporated true historical events about the Nazis, and also, since it was a World War II novel, I incorporated real war history so that it would be an authentic read as you're reading the fictional mystery.
Right, you'd feel like you were right there, and of course that's the whole idea. Well, the timing is perfect. Halloween, good book. As Brian said, you can read it in probably a couple of hours, depending on how you read. Marty Weaver's story is so interesting. Darkness Rising, pick it up on Amazon.com. Brian, always fun to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it's been a blast. Thanks for having me back, Kate.
Thank you.
Looking back, pre-keeping track of the progress of the keeping of the ego intact. Before I realized I was a man, I suppose I...
It's time to kick some ash, because cigarettes have met their match. Smokers are switching to Vapriot e-liquid by LeSig, because when you kick ash, you kick tar and smelly smoke too. LeSig smokes the competition with real people customer service, a 7-day satisfaction guarantee, and same-day fast free shipping. Become a vapor today at LeSig.com, spelled LeCIG.com. LeSig e-cigarettes, kick some ash.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral! Don't take on the IRS alone! I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill sometimes! I can even get it zeroed out completely!
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral!
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Don't
complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels, too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.
My dad was 59 when he collapsed from a heart attack late last year. Just this past August was when we spread his ashes on the St. Croix River. I loved my dad, but boy was he stubborn. He hadn't been to the doctor in over 25 years. His excuse? He simply couldn't afford it. He wasn't a rich man by any means. At less than $107 per month, LibertyOnCall.org would have been the perfect alternative for my father. Don't wait. Go to LibertyOnCall.org right now, for not just your sake, but for the sake of your loved ones. Again, that's LibertyOnCall.org.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
We are the inscription visible on the hero's memorial. Locked in cerebral manacles, we rattle our brains. Unhinged intellect. How do you embalm a phantom?
Welcome back to America Tonight. Very pleased to welcome to this show somebody who fought so hard for human rights and saw so many atrocities. And I think you know his name. He's very, very well known for some of the wonderful things that he's done since that time. But he's the UN force commander for Rwanda. Romeo Dallaire joins us now. General, it is such a pleasure to have you on this show. And so many people have now talked about Rwanda and how come more wasn't done, how come more people didn't pay attention, and what was the United States' role in what happened. And you wrote two best-selling books, Shake Hands with the Devil, and They Fought Like Soldiers, They Die Like Children. And, you know, you're working on a book about post-traumatic stress disorder. For you, when you stepped, if we take you back there, when we stepped back to Rwanda, did you realize what you were going to encounter with your peacekeeping forces?
That's an absolutely outstanding question to ask. You sort of say, if I did, what kind of a nutball would want to go into something so horrific as that? There was in the UN at the time, an explosion of peacekeeping missions. Remember, the Cold War ended not long before that, and we had the Gulf War, yes, but everybody was expecting. In fact, George Bush Sr. said that we were entering a new world order. Remember, people were talking about peace dividend and we don't need militaries anymore and the whole world's going to be nice and all that kind of stuff. Well, all of a sudden, all these civil wars and imploding nations and failing states started to appear where they were trying to get rid of dictators and trying to bring democracy and all kinds of stuff like this and human rights and the like. And so at the UN headquarters, they went from, you know, four or five long-standing, reasonably cheesy Chapter 6 missions of observing conflicts that had been resolved for a long time but needed a referee to keep it going. We exploded into 15 to 16 missions in a matter of less than a year. And so Rwanda was a really small little project. They had been having problems in Cambodia. They had been problems in Japan by then, ex-Yugoslavia. And so they were hoping that this would be a success story so that they could re-encourage people to continue to support peacekeeping. And so I was to do it on the cheap. People thought we'd be able to pull it off and that people really wanted peace. And what really suckered us in was the fact that that over-optimistic demand of the UN to try to get something positive on the books completely, ignored, I would even go as far as to say, the fact that there was strong extremism on the side of one of the ethnic groups, the ones in power, that they were not, in the end, ever going to reconcile with these other ethnic groups, and they did not want to share power. And then the whole thing went to hell.
And, you know, and obviously you saw, as I mentioned before, there's no great way to describe it, just so many bodies, so much atrocity, so much murder, just a horrific scene. But one thing that isn't talked about very much, there was actually hundreds of thousands of people, am I right, that were saved?
Well, the way it worked out was is that in fact, it's working out still today when you see Iraq and Syria and so on. The civilian population are now both the targets and the prize in civil wars. And so each side will try to maneuver as much as it can of the population for its own power base and negotiating base for the future. And so the extremists were moved just under 4 million people and culled them of the other ethnic group, the Tutsis, as they were doing it. So they slaughtered 800,000 as they moved 4 million and left about another close to a million injured or sick because of HIV/AIDS and so on along the way. So that massive movement happened. Where we were able to intervene was the fact that they wanted them all outside of the country in the periphery, like in the Congo and Tanzania, so that they would negotiate their return. They wanted a scorched earth for the rebels by actually moving the population completely. Well, we were able to prevent 1.6 million from actually leaving the country by proving that we could protect them. But the real in-your-face protection happened around the capital, where we were able, you know, on five sites, to protect 32,000 who were in immediate danger of being slaughtered. In fact, one contingent withdrew before it got orders to do so from us, but its country told them to pull out. And about 4,000 were slaughtered in a matter of hours.
Wow. So then you come back from what happens in Rwanda, and eventually people are certainly seeking you out, wanting to know what happened. All of that is more is revealed. But you're dealing with the post-traumatic, you know, stress of it all. And now we talk about that term a lot more. But when you had the post-traumatic stress, it wasn't discussed as much. How difficult, obviously, was that for you to process all of what you'd seen?
Well, I had already, the war had ended on the 18th of July, and it was essentially the population was completely destabilized. I mean, there were bodies all over the place and so on. But the actual fighting had ended, so it was time for people to come back. And I, at that time, had completely burned myself out to the extent where I had asked to be relieved because I was becoming a liability to my mission. I just couldn't handle all these people coming back and complaining that the place was a mess. They were still finding bodies after we had ran out of food, water, medical supplies. We even ran out of ammunition. So I sort of broke down and asked to be relieved, and then went back to Canada and was made deputy commander of the Canadian Army. At a time of massive budget cuts, you guys were going through the same things in the States. General Sullivan was doing miracles there in the States with the U.S. Army. And at that time, the word was, you know, welcome back to the real world. There's lots of work to be done here. And with time and hard work, all this will disappear from your mind. That was the theory of the time, which in fact was exactly the contrary to trying to heal this wound, because post-traumatic stress disorder is what we call an operational stress injury. We even use it now with our first responders in Canada. And so it's an honorable injury between the 2 years that has both physical and psychological impact, of course. Physical meaning the brain, some of the circuitry gets shot to hell. But in this sort of process, I knew there was something wrong because of not sleeping and all of the horrors were coming back on. But didn't realize that this was an injury, and it took some pretty significant events that made me all of a sudden be quite conscious that I needed some real serious help. And the system at the time was not structured. We didn't have Vietnam like you had, where you had so many psychological casualties. Nobody knew exactly what to do with this, and so we were getting suicides by the barrelful. And so I went public as a general, still serving, that I was injured, that I felt there's a whole bunch of walking wounded amongst us, and because of these ethical and moral and legal dilemmas we face in these complex and ambiguous missions that are given to us, that if we don't do something, we're going to continue to see guys, mostly guys and some girls, yes, killing themselves, destroying their families, beating up their wives and kids, into drugs, booze, and God knows what else. And so by going public, it took nearly 3 years to bring that about. I went to the United States to White River Junction in Vermont, where you have a huge clinic there on PTSD, and the head of it is a Dr. Matthew Friedman, an extraordinary guy. His wife was a nurse in a MASH in Vietnam. And I said, listen, we got nothing. We need your help. And can you help us? And he said, we're going to help you because we don't want you to go through what we went through in Vietnam. And I said, what was that? He said, the Vietnam War by then had been over for 22 years. He said that there are over 58,000 names on that magnificent monument in Washington. But they had on their books at the time, those were only the ones registered, on their books over 102,000 suicides directly related to Vietnam. So what you guys are feeling now and what we're feeling with Iraq on suicide and so on, is still, it's not the tip of the iceberg, a reality that these wars keep killing. And these injuries, like operational stress injury, can be terminal. And so that's a dimension that we're still fighting very strong here to get people to realize.
We're speaking with former UN Force Commander for Rwanda, Romeo Dallaire, and we'll continue with this conversation in just a minute on America Tonight.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral. Don't pick on the IRS alone. I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral.
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
For health and vitality for you, your family, and friends, get the Healthy Start Pack from Youngevity, as recommended by registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs.
If you're a junk food junkie, getting on the Healthy Start Pack is one of the best ways to wean yourself off of processed snack foods and start putting good nutrition in your body. If you have a loved one who's dealing with heart disease or any health challenge, the Healthy Start Pack makes a great gift. If you have a grandparent or a parent in a nursing home, you will be amazed at the difference a once-a-day dose of the Healthy Start Pack will make in your loved one's energy levels, in their memory, in their mood, and in their general outlook on life.
Give the gift of optimal health to your loved ones and order the Healthy Start Pack from Youngevity by calling 866-735-2470. That's 866-735-2470 or on the web at brightsidemen.com. That's brightsidemen.com. Order today.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
UN Force Commander for Rwanda, Romeo Dallaire. We're talking about some really important things. So many of you out there that have called us who have served in former wars and know what post-traumatic stress syndrome is like. We're talking about that. And General, one of the things that you talk about, and boy, we talk about a lot on the show, and I know there are lots of other people that try to peel back the cover on this or take those layers down, whatever is the great terminology to put it. But why is it that we see, and maybe I'm answering my own question, but it seems that governments certainly rank economic and political interest way above humanity, because we see that there are many other atrocities happening in the world and not enough people to move the mountains to help those folks. When you see that in other lands, how disturbing is that to you?
You live a constant frustration of knowing that that a conflict went catastrophic, that was preventable, but what was not in fact prevented. Because of self-interest, because it wasn't on somebody's radar screen, because there were no resources and the only thing that was there were human beings. And as in Rwanda, I was told by one country, you know, we're not coming in to give you any resources because the only thing that's here are human beings, and there are too many anyways, it's overpopulated. So the human being is still, in too many cases, the lowest common denominator. And we become all excited when we see a sort of incident happen, like with the Syrian refugees. I just back from Jordan from my work with child soldiers in the refugee camps. And so you get this child, the picture of the child that drowned, and the media go absolutely, totally committed to it. And then all of a sudden we get the emotional, spontaneous responses from governments to a problem that 4 years ago, if we had intervened properly under responsibility to protect, we could have avoided this thing from happening in the first place. So I think that we are now at a time where we are more culpable of ineptness and lack of statesmanship and sense of humanity than we were in the early 90s when we were stumbling into this whole new realm of imploding nations and failing states and civil wars. And so the reason I hold people more culpable is that we do have tools. That we finally have adjusted from our experiences in certain conflicts, plus the introduction of the concept of responsibility to protect, that says if a country is massively abusing the human rights of its people, we have a responsibility to go in and protect the people. Not do a regime change, not go away and blow away Gaddafi, but in fact protect these people and prevent them from, in fact, being martyred by the government and find other options for the government to play with. Well, we don't want to operationalize it. We don't want to take casualties. We don't want to get suckered into these problems. And so if the developed countries, and I hold very much the middle powers, the Germanys, the Canadas, the Japans, the ones who've got a lot of capability but are sitting on their hands waiting for you guys, the United States, to get set up, to be hauled into these things, and then be held accountable for if things don't go well enough. Until these people start reacting in a humanitarian fashion that does reflect a responsibility to protect, because in the end, there isn't a conflict in the world that's not going to affect us by home, by pandemics out of the refugee camps, by extremism and terrorism is going to come out of the rage of a lot of these people in these displaced camps and so on, by the not having the availability of the special resources like coltan, you know, the Congo as an example, and by influencing our diasporas back home, who are still locked in and get suckered into different things. And look at the recruitment that's going on even on the radicalization of our youth with ISIS. So we are myopic in our look at what conflict is overseas, because we're still looking at it with lenses of 50 years ago, where in fact anything that goes on overseas is only about 12 hours from a sophisticated bus ride in a plane.
Yeah, to put it that way, boy, it really puts it into perspective. I'd be remiss not to, I know that you're passionate about this. You're a big advocate for ending the use of child soldiers. You just mentioned what we see that's happening with younger people as far as ISIS. But soldiers themselves, turning children into soldiers, and you've started an initiative for that that's very personal. Tell us about it.
What I did is In 2004, I had been medically released from the forces and had been working on war-affected children in the international development side of the house. I got a fellowship at Harvard at the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at the Kennedy School and did a research paper on child soldiers because I wanted to prove that the slaughter of the 800,000 in Rwanda was done mostly by young people who had been suckered in by a political group that had shifted them from being a youth movement into a militia and a vicious militia. And so since then, I've built a program. It's now at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, where we're based out of, where we go in prevention of the recruitment of child soldiers. We're not into rehabilitation, reintegration. That's picking up the pieces of those that do survive. Many of them don't. And so what we do is we're into countries, at the invitation of the countries, we go into their school system, and with pedagogical tools like local comic books built by ex-child soldiers and so on, and we teach the kids not to get suckered in, and we influence the parents to protect them in a different way than before. And on the second side, which is now the more dynamic one, is we train military and police in how to de-escalate confrontations with child soldiers, and in fact, how to be able to neutralize them as a weapon system on the battlefield and make them a liability for those who want to recruit them. So we've recently produced, in fact, the standing operating procedures for NATO, where we'll be training commands and so on. The African Union has asked us to do the same for them. We are engaged in countries from Colombia right through, soon we'll be going to Myanmar, helping them prevent the recruitment of children, and in so doing, not only preventing their effectiveness by other means than simply killing them, which is in everybody's doctrine now, they just treat them as another belligerent. We've offered them a whole new doctrinal framework that they can use and tactics to be used. But we also are into the business of influencing the thinking of those countries in regards to wanting to use children as weapons of war.
Wow. Romeo Dallaire, thanks for all you do to make the world a better place. And if anybody wants to help, what would you tell them?
Go to childsoldiers.org.
Childsoldiers.org. Thanks, Romeo. Thank you so much.
All the best to you.
Wow, what a treat to get a chance to speak to this incredible man, Dallaire, and what he witnessed. And if you watch the movie Hotel Rwanda, and it's a movie, but the movie does do an incredible portrayal of what he saw, and he is heavily featured in that. Of course, he's played by the actor Nick Nolte, who, you know, you think about it, he was the acting Canadian colonel sent to oversee the UN forces in Rwanda and then stumbled upon some of the most horrific things one could ever see is what we described. We know the numbers are crazy. He mentioned them. More than 800,000 Rwandans were killed in the genocide, and there was pleading and begging, including the general himself, for more troops and help, and they didn't come. They didn't come until it was much too late, and finally it all ended. But, boy, what happened in between was just unbelievable, unspeakable horrors. So stay with us, much more coming your way on America Tonight.
Do you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Then get on board with the Tax Admiral and let us steer your way to financial freedom.
The IRS is the largest collection agency in the world. They can freeze your bank accounts, seize your car, home, will garnish your paychecks and benefits.
Don't take on the IRS alone. I can fight for you using industry secrets that can help stop the IRS. I'll cut your penalties, slash your interest, and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company with over 30 years experience helping people clean up their mess with the IRS. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rating.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, are facing an audit, a lien, or levy, then call me right away.
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.